Blog Talk Radio.
The year, 1888. The place, London's East End. Dead and mutilated bodies are popping up all over, from Stamford to Whitechapel. Jack the Ripper is leaving his mark, and the city's on edge. Yvonne Mason is back with a tale of murder and millinery. The Rhodes Hat Factory is booming while the body count rises. Why now? How are these hats connected? Has the Hatter gone mad? Mad Hatter, Yvonne Mason. Available now on Amazon.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Off the Chain, and I am your host, Yvonne Mason. And yes, the Hatter has gone mad. The Hatter always goes mad. Tonight, my guest is someone that I've known for quite a while. Her name is Hydra M. Starr, and we'll get into why that's her name. Originally, she was one half of a set of twin fetuses conceived during the holiday season of 1977. But Miss Hydra decided, for various personal reasons, that she disliked not only the holiday, but her twin. So one she consumed, which was the other twin, and the other she just still mostly ignores. Upon her birth, Hydra's mother immediately began the process of trying to indoctrinate her into the brand of evangelical Christianity to which she and the rest of her family belonged. Though Hydra's imaginative nature caused her to find the stories and superstitions of her mother's faith appealing, she just could not ultimately bring herself to believe any of it. So, she shrugged off both the religion and the Christian name that her mother bestowed upon her. She adopted and has gone by the name of Hydra ever since, both in public and privately. About that time, she became a teenage atheist. Now, it was through Hydra's father's side of the family, by the way of her paternal grandmother, that she was first exposed to the ideas and subjects that would most profoundly shape and inspire her creativity. And let me tell you, folks, this woman is one creative creature. Ghosts, demons, aliens, UFOs, conspiracy theories, strange events from history, unsolved mysteries, and anything unexplained were the topics of late-night conversation between the young Hydra and her grandmother. So naturally, as Hydra grew, her worldview became more skeptical than that of the wild-eyed child that had listened intently to every ghost story her grandmother told. But still, she held on to her interest in the paranormal and the occult. Soon, she was seeking out books and other sources of knowledge on mythology, demonology, witchcraft, and finally, Satanism. Now, it was her study into the last of these that proved to be the most surprising, as she found something in Satanism that she had not expected. The godless heathen had found her tribe. Soon after, on her 19th birthday, Hydra joined, of all things, the Church of Satan. And she continued her study of all things strange. Today, Hydra holds the title of witch in the Church of Satan and has used her knowledge and passion for monsters, magic, and mythology to fuel her creative endeavors. One of these endeavors is a line of pyrography items Hydra designs and hand burns featuring symbols and signs from various occult and magical traditions, as well as a number that have been inspired by horror literature. Continuing with this theme, horror literature, or more precisely, speculative fiction, also plays a big part in another area of her life and creativity, and that she both writes and publishes it. Unlike the classic literature she pulls inspiration from for her pyrography, her own writing has as much overt erotic nature to it. It would not be completely unfair to say that she writes smut. Besides this, she also owns, edits, and publishes Infernal Ink magazine. So it would be entirely fair to say its pages are almost filled with exclusive horror smut. Sex and magic reign supreme, and Hydra M. Stars World. Hello, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you tonight?
I am good. I am so glad you're on my show. Tonight is definitely going to be one of those off-the-chain nights.
Yes, it is. And I just realized that you were reading that, just how long my bio is. Jesus, I'm long-winded.
I love it. It is wonderful. It's a great bio. It explains a lot.
Covers a lot of territory, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But look how long it took you to get there, though.
Yeah, I've been at this a while.
Well, let's talk about that. Tell the folks how long you and I have known each other, because we've been traveling this path for a while.
Over 10 years now, I would say.
Yeah.
I think we met in 2005, 2004, something like that.
2006 or 7.
Oh, okay. I know I met you around the same time I met Andrea Dean Van Scoy, so
yeah.
I've known her for about 10 years. But yeah, that sounds about right.
So it's been a minute.
Oh, yeah, it's been a few minutes, yeah.
Now, when you met us, we were all doing crazy things.
Aren't we still?
Well, yeah. Were you ever involved with the publisher who shall not be named?
No, I avoided that bullet. I dodged that one.
Aren't you happy you dodged that one?
Yes, I am. I'm very happy I dodged that one.
But the thing is, see, in a roundabout way, it kind of brought us all together.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it did.
Well,
but,
all right. Let's talk a little bit about your background.
Oh, my background. Well, I'm Southern. I'm Southern, obviously, as the people can tell. I'm just a farm girl that went really, really bad.
I don't think you went bad. You just marched to your own drummer.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, the whole entire band is Hydra M. Star. What made you choose Hydra Star?
You know, that's a multi-level thing. I was always really into mythology and Greek mythology especially. And I have this weird thing where I can't keep the same hairstyle for very long. So it was like, you know, I had many heads. And the Hydra, of course, is the many-headed serpent from Greek mythology. So that kind of came in. And then when I was in high school, Marilyn Manson became a thing, and he had a song that mentioned, "I am the Hydra. Now you'll see your star." And I was like, "Well, I kind of like that. I kind of like that as the last name." So you know, took that up, and then the M came in from, again, Greek/Roman mythology, and it stands for morning, which is morning star, which is Lucifer. So that's how the whole name kind of came together.
When you took on that name, now you and I both know I'm from the South too. I'm from Georgia, and
yeah,
we're both from the Deep South, and we're both from that Bible Belt. When you started down that path, did your poor mother have an epileptic fit?
My mother is very strange. She did, and she didn't. You know, my mother's one of those Christians that's always backsliding, as they put it. And I think she was in one of her really deep backsliding times at that point. So I don't know. Like, I don't think she particularly reacted quite the way she would have if she had been a little more deeply invested in her religion at the time. But, you know, yeah, I mean, she kind of has some problems. But for the most part, her and her family didn't have too bad a reaction to anything, because I was the baby of the grandchildren, and I was the only girl. So in my grandfather's eyes, I did no wrong ever. So that helped me a lot.
That was your ally in this journey to the other side of the darkness.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my grandfather, he was an interesting character. I mean, you know, he had served in World War II in the Pacific Theater, and he had a lot of illegitimate children, let's say. So he kind of got into that carnal nature as well. You know, so yeah, he was a card. He was a real card. That whole side of the family was, honestly, because his parents moved here from Germany to kind of get away from the Nazis when the Nazis were first starting up. And you know, that whole side of the family was a little odd, but
well,
yeah.
What did you actually learn from your paternal grandmother when they were talking about ghosts and demons and aliens and UFOs and conspiracy theories?
Oh, Lord. Lord, what didn't I learn? I mean, it was like, I tell people, you know, if she was alive today, she could host that show Ancient Aliens. Like, she could just do the whole thing. I mean, she was very into all of that. You know, the conspiracy theories were a lot of, like, the JFK stuff and, Project Paperclip, which was, you know, the Nazis got brought over and, you know, helped with the space race, and then, you know, the hoax moon landing, and, I mean, it's just everything you can imagine she discussed or knew about. But the ghost thing... You know, the house that she and my grandfather lived in when I was growing up, there were some strange things that went on there. And I don't quite know how to explain all of it. I mean, my belief is pretty different from theirs. You know, they full-on believed it was, you know, the disincarnated spirit of a man who had owned the property prior and had lost the property, but there was a lot of strange things that went on in that house. You know, the most profound one was one night they had this old, you remember the old stereo systems that looked, they sort of looked like coffins. You lifted up the lid and it had everything inside of it.
Yes.
They had one of those, and it kept coming on, like it kept turning on, and like the radio would be playing. It kept turning on, and it kept turning on. And, you know, finally my grandfather was like, you know, I've had enough of this. And he goes in and unplugs it. And we're sitting there, and we're, you know, we're watching TV or whatever. And we hear music again. And this thing is playing unplugged. It is on.
Wow.
And it is playing music, and it is unplugged. It's like, okay, so we're going to listen to music, I guess, at this point. We're apparently listening to music tonight. You know, so yeah, I mean, there was just, you know, strange things like that would happen. You know, things would disappear, and then you would find them again, like in the oddest places. Just little stuff like that would go on. And, yeah, I mean, my grandmother, you know, she full-on went into the ghost explanation for all of it. So
what was your
was
take
that.
On it?
You know, at the time, it didn't ever scare me. I really didn't know what to think of it. And as I've gotten older, I've kind of been drawn more to the idea of tulpas, which is thought forms that are created by the collective energy of people. Basically a form of magic, if you will.
Right.
I'm kind of attracted to that idea as an explanation, because I kind of have a problem with the idea. Well, first of all, I have a problem with the idea of continuing after death, but I really have a problem with somebody hanging out on a farm for ever how many, you know, decades and centuries, you know, turning on radios and whatnot. I don't see that. I mean, I don't see why that would be the thing that, you know, someone would do if they do continue on after death. Well, you know, I think we as people, we have a lot more power than we realize.
Oh, I agree with
changes,
you. We do.
To cause changes and such in our environment and to cause things to happen. I feel we have a lot more power than we realize. That's kind of my explanation.
If we use that power, just think what we could do.
I know. And, I mean, people get focused on stuff. And, I mean, it's kind of the idea of what you focus on becomes your reality.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen it so many times. Like, I know people, and even myself, will focus on, like, oh, this is going to go wrong, or, you know, this is going to happen, this is, you know, and then it does.
It's like,
you know,
putting it out there, and even if you never say it out loud, if you think about it and like you say, you focus on it, it becomes self-fulfilling prophecy.
It does. It does. I mean, I've seen it happen so many times in so many, like, strange ways that's just kind of become my explanation for most things paranormal. It's people just focus on it so much, you know, it manifests in some way. So, yeah.
Interesting concept. Well, that begs to the next question.
Mm-hmm.
When you became an atheist during your teenage years, what led you down the path of Satanism? This fascinates me because it's unique.
I mean, as I've said, I've always had a real interest in anything paranormal or even religion. Like, religion fascinates me, even though I didn't believe at that point in anything. It fascinated me. I would, like, read whatever I could find on various religions. I mean, Wicca, Buddhism, you know, Hinduism, all of it fascinated me. And, you know, like I mentioned before, you know, Marilyn Manson was a thing when I was in high school that was popular. And, you know, he talked a lot about Satanism, so that meant everybody else was talking a lot about Satanism. And, you know, some of the stuff they were saying, it didn't jive with what he was saying in interviews. And I'm like, you know, there's got to be some explanation to why he's saying something so vastly different than what everybody else around me is saying. So I decided, you know, the Barnes & Noble in my town had just opened up, and they had, you know, books by this guy Manson kept talking about, Anton LaVey. So I went in and said, well, you know, I want to see what this Satanism thing is about. And honestly, when I first bought the Satanic Bible, I expected it to be a bunch of kooky, crazy stuff. I mean, I was not expecting much, to be perfectly honest. And I read it, and it made a lot of sense to me. I mean, Satanists are, in effect, atheists. We don't believe in a higher power, or anything like that. And it's just, you know, it was just a lot of life philosophies that, you know, you create your own heaven or hell here. Your life is going to be what you make it to be, and ultimately, you're the only one that really cares what kind of life you're going to have. You and the people you fill your life with that you love,
right,
are all that really matter. Because, I mean, the kind of the philosophy, you know, I have is, even if there is some higher power, I don't think it cares what we're doing on this ball of dirt. So, you know, the whole clockwork deity, I guess. But, and I don't even believe that, but it just, you know, that just appealed to me. And there was also, you know, a lot to do with, we in Satanism, we have lesser magic and greater magic. And greater magic is ritual magic. And ritual magic for us is all about purging yourself of whatever energy you have that's causing you mental stress, let's say. If you're worried about whether or not you're going to get the promotion at work, or you're in love with the girl next door, but she, you know, won't give you the time of day, or you know, someone has done you seriously wrong, and you know your options are do nothing, do a ritual, or murder them. You want to do the ritual.
Yeah, you can go to jail for doing murder.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're going to go to jail if you murder them. So you want to do the ritual and symbolically curse them and get rid of that energy. And you know, I mean, that energy it can go out and it can cause, I feel, real world events, but that's not the point of it, though. The point is to free yourself of it so it's not hampering your happiness in your life. And that really appealed to me a lot. Because, I mean, as humans, I think we need ritual, we need religion, we need these things. So that was kind of what drew me in, I guess. And then I joined the church, and it's pretty much been history from there.
So once you embraced this faith, did that lead you into the path of your pyrography and writing in the genre that you write?
No. I always had a interest in horror, like pretty extreme horror, from an early age, from about like 13 or so. And I would say that the majority of Satanists I know are not into horror. This is surprising as that might be to some people. The majority of us are not into that. I mean, quite a few are, and quite a few of your more vocal and more visual people in the church are, but majority really aren't. But I always had an interest in that. And the pyrography, I mean, that is sort of tied to Satanism in that I got back into it because I was trying to create a sigil of Baphomet for my home altar, and I can't paint for shit. I mean, my painting's horrible. I can't paint a circle, a straight line. I definitely can't paint a goat. It's just bad. But I could wood burn, and you know, I saw the wood burning tool in the hobby shop I was in, and I got some wood, and I created that. And once I got online and started posting pictures of it, people, you know, wanted things. So that was kind of how I got into that, indirectly related, I guess.
Well, talk about your, did you write your books first, or get involved with the books first, or did you start the magazine first?
I was writing for a few years, and I wrote mostly, I mean, I'm writing published mostly short stories. In poetry, but I was doing that for a few years before I started the magazine. The magazine kind of came out of a column that Dave Lipscomb and I were doing for a magazine called Herotica, which Herotica, you know, it was having some problems. The magazine was having some problems. The editor was dying of cancer. He passed away earlier this year, in fact. We, you know, and at that time, there just wasn't a lot of other places people who were writing erotic horror could really submit their work to. I mean, you would go read submission guidelines, and it would always say, you know, no gratuitous sex, no, you know, whatever. And I was like, you know, we can do this. Like, we can, you know, we can start something and give people a home to get some recognition for their work and get out there. And that was kind of how Infernal Ink got started. So the writing came first and then the book.
You have a very large following for that magazine, don't you?
It's doing pretty well, yeah. You know, we're up to about 2,000 people on Facebook, which I haven't ever, you know, really paid for much of that exposure. So, I mean, we're doing fairly well, which is just me now running the magazine. But, yeah, it does fairly well. We're filled for the next year as far as content goes.
That's excellent.
There's a lot of interest in it. I mean, and, you know, even now, there's still not a lot of outlets for this type of fiction. You kind of have us and a couple of other places, a couple of other anthologies that come out once or twice a year, and you can self-publish on Kindle. And those are kind of your options with this type of fiction. So.
For the listening audience that may be novices in that type of genre and may think, what the hell are they talking about? It's either erotica or horror. Will you explain to them exactly what this genre is? Because it's been underground for a long time. It's been out there for a while, but it was underground more or less.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of, you know, what the title of it implies, which is erotic horror. It's a lot. I describe it a lot like paranormal horror, or paranormal erotica, because people are more familiar with that because of, you know, things like Twilight, which we don't need to mention. But you know, people are more aware of that genre of the, you know, the ghost that seduces you and loves you and you live happily ever after with it. It's a little bit like that, only more violent. Yeah, there's usually no happily ever after with erotic horror. It's usually someone's bloody and dead by the end. I mean, but there is, I mean, that's usually how it goes. You know, you try to have sex with the zombie and the zombie eats you pretty much.
Yeah, that would be a problem because they do like to do that.
Yes, I mean, you know, it's kind of like you know how some people, you know, will read things like Twilight and think, well, you know, this girl, this ain't gonna work because this vampire is gonna eventually turn on her and kill her. Well, in erotic horror, he does turn on her and kill her. So, I mean, it's kind of, you know, that's kind of the genre summed up, I think.
He's literally enjoying the fruits of his labor, so to speak.
Exactly. I mean, you know, but yeah, that's kind of, you know, and then there's other stories that are more like the traditional horror story, but there's a sexual element to it that makes it not quite fit with the traditional horror. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff now that a lot of horror magazines won't take simply because they can't put a PG-13 rating on it, which is unfortunate.
That is unfortunate.
Yeah, and we get a lot of that, too. So.
Well, have you ever turned down a submission because it wasn't gory enough or erotic enough?
Yes. I turned down several a year for those reasons. I mean, the main thing that irks me is when people send me a story and they'll talk about, you know, they'll lead you up to the sexy part, and then it's like it cuts away, and then they come back. And it's like, I don't want the off-camera sex for the story. That kind of irks me. But get a lot of that, and I tend to turn that down. But the gory element, you know, I mean, the gore doesn't have to be extreme to get into Infernal Ink. It just has to be a good story. It can be more psychological horror than gore, but it has to be good.
It has to be real good psychological horror.
Yeah, I mean, has to be, you know, yeah.
Tell me about Grandma's Necklace.
Oh, that, well, that is not erotic horror. That is a story, I wrote back in 2012, you know, when the world was supposed to end, because the Mayans said so. I did an anthology back then of end-of-the-world stories. And it was a lot of 2012, so the book is now out of print because it was just so – I took it out of print earlier this year because it was just so dated, most of it. And Great-Grandmother's Necklace was kind of my idea of, well, okay, what if, you know, at some point in the future, this collective belief we have – in the apocalypse and in hell manifests itself in some kind of tulpa type way. And the gates of hell literally open and apocalypse starts. And how will my people, you know, my people being Satanists, respond to that? And that's kind of where the story was born out of. And then I threw some personal elements in it, which is, it's no secret now that the main character is supposed to be my great-granddaughter. But, you know, I kind of threw some personal things in there and kind of created some characters that they represent some stereotypes, let's say, we see within Satanism. You know, we have the outrageous one that's not really quite, like, he don't really quite understand it, and he's a little bit, you know, out there, and he's doing his own thing, and, you know, they're all kind of looking at him like, you're completely insane, but, you know, and then you have the boy that's, you know, young, and he's kind of just coming into it, and he really, you know, looks up to these people that have been in it longer than him, and you know, he's very focused on the main character Danielle's family history, you know, so he's very, you know, focused on that. And then you have the turncoat, which is the one that when the shit hits the fan, she becomes Christian. So,
it's everyday life. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like, you know, well, how would my people, you know, respond to this, you know? And I think it's funny. I always read that story as more funny than anything else because the main character, which I said I threw in a lot of personal elements, she's just a smart ass. Like, you know, she's just having none of their crap. Like, none of it. She's just having none of it. And, you know, yeah, I mean, so I always read that story as more funny than anything else. I didn't mean for it to be very, very serious, but
what about Candy,
you know,
Blood and Sex? That the title within itself is interesting.
Yes, that is werewolf erotica, violent, bloody. Yeah, I mean, that's yeah. I always tell people, you know, it's werewolf rape. I don't, you know. Yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, it's about a girl. You know, I said it. I put some personal elements in this one too because I said it in North Carolina. And the main character, you know, is this girl that her parents are killed in animal attack when they're camping when she's really small. And she grows up and, you know, she ends up kidnapped by werewolves, pretty much. And they want her to be, you know, want her to join the pack. And that's kind of how that goes. And then what will she do? The main inspiration for that was the idea of Stockholm Syndrome. That if you're put into a situation and you're not allowed to leave it, and you become attached to the people, you know, and you begin to sympathize with their plight.
And that happens a lot with kidnap victims, even
exactly
in this day and age.
I mean, I know it happens a lot, and you know that's kind of what happens to her. She's kidnapped by these werewolves, and you know, will she or won't she accept, you know, her place that's forced upon her in the pack? Because she has no choice. I mean, she's given it's either, you know, join or we're going to kill you.
And that could also be an analogy for domestic abuse relationship.
It is. I mean, you know, I always tell because people, you know, the main male character in it is Gibb. And, you know, a lot of people were telling me, you know, oh, you know, Gibb's so sexy. And it's like, Gibb's a bad guy. Like, Gibb is not a good guy. Like, he is sexy, and there's definitely some very erotic and sexy elements to it. But, I mean, it's the fantasy of it. If you really had to deal with Gibb, he's not a good guy. He's really not.
And that's how it happens. They suck you right in, and before you know it, Stockholm Syndrome mm-hmm. has set in. You either accept it or you die.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, and that's kind of, you know, that's kind of the deal here. And it's, you know, making the best of a bad situation, too, because, you know, I mean, kind of once you're a werewolf, you're a werewolf. I mean, you know, you can't go back. You're stuck with that. Yeah, I mean, you can't go back to humanity at that point. So you kind of got to deal with what you're in then. But yeah, he's not a good guy. Like, I always have kind of mixed feelings when people tell me they really like his character because, I mean, I get it. I get the appeal because, I mean, I like a dominant man myself, okay? I mean, I'm a bit submissive myself, okay, more than a bit. But so I get the appeal of Gibb, but really he's a bad guy. You don't want him.
He crosses the line in many ways.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he will kill anybody that is going to stand between him and what he wants. I mean, without regret, without remorse, without sympathy, he just kills them. So,
some of the psychos I write about. What about the Davis Diary?
Davis Diary?
Yeah, that's in there. Maybe that's not something that you did. I wrote that down. I might have had a brain cramp. What about Don't Look Back?
Oh, yeah, Don't Look Back. That was an anthology I was part of a couple of years ago. It's Urban Legends. I wrote a story for it based on incident my father had with a demon dog, hellhound, whatever you want to call it, black dog, black shuck, that sort of thing. Yeah. I wrote a story about that for that anthology. It's 13 stories that all center around various urban legends. The editor of that and I are going to be doing another anthology together that we're taking submissions for now called Bon Appetit, and it's cannibalism themed. So
I was going to ask you about Bon Appetit because in your submission guidelines, and I'm paraphrasing because I read it, but it didn't stick with me, something to the effect that if they don't get eaten, don't bother submitting.
Yeah, I mean, we want cannibalism. It's you know, people eating people. That's what we want, is people eating people. You know, we're taking erotic, non-erotic, gory, not super gory. We're kind of open to various genres there, but it has to be people getting eaten.
See, ladies and gentlemen, this is why this show is called Off the Chain, because I have people from all walks of life. I have authors from all walks of life, from children's authors to cannibalism authors. And because writing and authors are as varied as the air we breathe, you can't put us in a box. And especially
no,
those of us, no, you can't, especially those of us that are indie authors, because we just do what the hell we want to do when we want to do it. Right?
Exactly. I publish whatever I want to publish at this point. I don't really answer to anybody except for Amazon and Lulu. That's it. That's who I answer to as far as content is concerned. And they're pretty, I mean, Lulu.com is pretty wide open on content. As long as you market as having adult content, they don't particularly care. Amazon can get a little tricky sometimes if there's images, but that's who I answer to. People either can read it or not. I put a warning on things that state it's for adults only. It has, you know, sexual violence. If you don't want to read that sort of thing, then, you know, we're not the magazine for you. But, yeah, just whatever
because
I want.
Sadly, if we were with the Big Six, some of your content would be ripped to shreds.
Yeah. I mean, the Big Six, they don't, you know, they don't like anything. They can't market to the masses. And the masses are pretty uncomfortable with a lot of the sort of things I'm doing. But, you know, that's
but
fine.
But there is
I mean,
a market for
it's
what
a business.
You do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a business, so I understand, but, yeah.
But there is a market for what you do, and like we talked about earlier, sadly, that market has been underground for a long, long time. But as things happen, it's now coming out. You're seeing more and more of it. And if that's what... If that's what someone wants to read, they should be able to read it, not be censored by publishing houses that don't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole.
And you know, and that's my big thing is I am anti-censorship. I'm not trying to push this on anybody who doesn't want to read it. If this isn't your thing, you know, go read something else. Read whatever you want to read. But I don't believe it should be censored.
No, it should not. Well, before we run out of time, tell me about Lilith Awakened.
Okay, that was a project. I think that was like 2012 as well. A friend of mine put that together, and it's a collection of essays that are, well, they're written by satanic women, basically four other women. But some men can get something out of it as well. And it centers a lot around women who have survived sexual abuse, rape, that sort of thing, and how they have applied some of the tenets of Satanism to help them cope with those situations and deal with that. My piece is a little different. My piece is about body dysmorphic disorder, which I was diagnosed with when I was in my early 20s. And those who are unfamiliar with it, it's kind of what they say Michael Jackson had, in that the way I see myself is not the way you see me. I often don't recognize myself in photographs. It causes a lot of anxiety, OCD, of all the mental... You know, similar mental disorders, it has the highest rate of suicide of all of them. And that's what my piece is about.
I did not know that. Well, since we've got a few minutes, spend a few minutes and talk about it. Then when I bring you back after the first of the year, that can be one of the major things we talk about because I do talk about causes and educate people, and this is a great platform to educate people.
Yeah, they don't understand. It's something I wish more people understood because a lot of times eating disorders, anorexia, bulimia, the underlying cause is body dysmorphic disorder. The person sees themselves as fat even when they're like only 100 pounds. It's very hard to explain to other people. There are times when I absolutely just cannot deal with photographs of myself. at all. Because I hate it. Like, I don't feel like it's me. I don't feel like that's what I look like. And I get, and you know, sometimes I get angry when people will compliment me on a photo or compliment me on my appearance, because it's like, I don't look the way you think I look, which is completely insane. But, you know, it's part,
but,
it's
but
part
of the
visual.
But that's how you feel,
curve.
Right?
Yeah,
that
I mean
is...
that's the disease, if you will, which I've learned to cope with mine a lot over the last few years. I definitely deal with it a lot better than some people do, and I definitely deal with it a lot better than I used to. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there's a high, like I said, there's a high rate of suicide, depression, OCD. It's pretty rough.
But ladies and gentlemen, even though she doesn't see herself the way that I see her, and I think she's a very beautiful person because she's beautiful inside and out, and I'll just leave it at that. But if you haven't gone on Hydra's page on Facebook, she's listed under Danielle Corbett. Friend her and read some of her stuff, because it is definitely A, eye-opening, B, educational, and it delves into the dark psychic of people that, as my mother would say years ago in polite company, you didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
So check her out. Before we leave here in a little bit, since we're this far into it, tell the listening audience where all you can be found, especially for your pyrography, because those works of art are absolutely beautiful.
Thank you. I can most easily be found if people just go to hydramstar.com. There's links at the bottom of every page to my Etsy shop, to Amazon, to Lulu, to Facebook, to Twitter, all of that. That's the easiest way to find everything, is just go to hydramstar.com. They can also go on Etsy and just type in all one word into the search, The Burning Witch, and my shop will come up.
And that is the name of the shop, The Burning Witch. That's where all your pyrography stuff. And ladies and gentlemen, I have to tell you, she makes some absolutely beautiful word work. I can't even talk tonight, Hydra. It's your fault. Some absolutely beautiful pieces with her wood burning. I've never seen such stunning things in all of my life. So support her, and if you're into her genre, go look it up. Now, when will the next magazine come out, the next Infernal Ink?
The next issue comes out on October 1st, so we're just a little over, I think, a week out from that. October 1st.
Will they be able to get it on Amazon?
Amazon, you can get it for Kindle on Amazon. The print, you have to go to lulu.com. But, again, if you just go to hydramstar.com, there's links to all the back issues and everything. So.
And there's really some interesting articles in those magazines. I mean, really, really good stuff, because I've read one.
Yeah, I mean, we try to cover a lot of territory with interviews and such. You know, expose people to things they wouldn't necessarily be exposed to, not necessarily even sexual things in the interviews, but just people and, you know, ideas you wouldn't normally see.
Well, tell someone out there, let's say that, like you, they wanted to go off the normal, quote-unquote, path, mm-hmm. and go off onto a journey that they'd never been before, but it's a passion for them. What would you tell them to do to keep that passion alive and not give up?
Well, I mean, you know, you just, honestly, you just have to do it. People, you know, you're going to be discouraged. You're going to have friends and family that frankly aren't going to care. They're just, you know, they're going to ignore what you're doing. But you gotta just keep doing it, and you will eventually find people with similar interests. You have to get out there. My main thing to tell people is just put yourself out there. Don't be afraid to send that Facebook friend request to somebody you don't know that seems to have a similar interest. Don't be afraid to join that group and speak up and talk about what you're interested in, whatever it is. Because finding other people that have similar interests is really going to boost you. And they're out there. Whatever you're interested in, whatever it is, there's other people out there.
And also don't be afraid to find people that have interests that is totally different from yours.
Exactly.
I consider Hydra a very, very good friend. Her interest and my interest in writing is daylight and dark. Mine is true crime, which is sort of erotica horror and murder
standard.
Mysteries. And it can get pretty rough. But because we share the common interest and the common love of writing and publishing, that's what our foundation is on, and we support each other. So if you're a romance writer, don't be afraid to hook up with Hydra, because she, trust me, she won't eat you for lunch. She might take a nibble, but she won't eat you, and she'll support you.
I mean,
am I right, Hydra?
You're absolutely correct. I have friends who write pretty much everything you can imagine, from children's books to true crime like yourself to nonfiction, self-help things. I mean, just everything. It's just, you know, the tools are all the same as far as publishing is concerned. So, you know, it's just what you use the tools for. But, yeah, connect with people. Connect with people. Because you're going to find people that can help and support you.
And what I tell everyone at every show is this particular show is a 5-year dream come true. Publishing my books is a 40-year dream come true. And the reason that I have been able to make these dreams real is because I have people like Hydra that on my worst day, she'll reach out or she'll say something totally off the wall that just will say, Yvonne, put your big girl pants on and get with it. Don't be stupid. Don't make stupid decisions. And that's what we need as authors and artists and musicians. We always need a kick in the butt because Hydra can tell you, sometimes we can have very fragile egos that we don't feel good enough. But if you have a dream,
I have those days. I have those days. You know, I have those days where I have to pick myself up off the floor. Absolutely.
But you just keep going because we have that passion. We, like you said, we would go insane if we didn't do this.
Yeah. I mean, and I have some really, really good friends that are involved in publishing and not involved in publishing that has been very supportive in helping me pick myself up off the floor, especially this year, because this has been a rough year, you know. So just make those contacts and keep going.
So understand, ladies and gentlemen, I don't care if your dream is to be the local garbage collector. That is a very honorable dream. I don't care if your dream is to be the next red carpet walker. Whatever that dream is, you grab onto that dream and make that dream yours. You own it because nobody can steal it unless you give them permission to steal it. And everything that you do, whether consciously or unconsciously, put it towards that dream. Little did Hydra know that when she listened to her paternal great-grandmother tell all of these stories that she told or saw things strangely happening in her grandparents' homestead, that it would help build her foundation of where she is today. So anything that you do in your life, let it go towards your dream. Because, as Yoda says, do or do not, there is no try. Am I correct, Hydra?
You are absolutely correct. I don't try anything. I just do it. Sometimes without thinking. I'm more of a doer than a thinker, but just do it.
Yeah, because if they overthink it, they're going to just think themselves right out of it, and then at the end of their day, they're going to go, well, I shoulda, I coulda, I woulda, but I didn't.
I tend to throw myself into things and commit to it and then figure out how to do it.
Speaking of committing, don't you have some upcoming projects?
We got Bon Appetit. It's looking like there may be some books coming out soon under the Infernal Ink banner. More pyrography stuff, lots of stuff. Some of it I can't even talk about yet because it's not even enough of a sure thing yet. But, yeah, lots of new releases coming out soon.
See, ladies and gentlemen, she just does it. And there's a mantra that I live by that if you do not try, then you have already failed. If you try, you have succeeded because you attempted to do whatever that thing is that you want to do. Do you agree, Hydra?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you don't even try. I mean, I know so many writers who they write and they never submit it anywhere. They never publish it. They never do anything with it because they're afraid. And they've already failed in a way.
Because the anagram for fear is false evidence that appears real. They've already convinced themselves that it's not good enough, nobody will read it, nobody will publish it, or whatever reason. So they just put it away in a drawer, and then they die unfulfilled. What a pity.
Yeah. It is a pity. You can't fear rejection. This is an industry. You cannot fear rejection in this industry.
No, you can't.
I mean, you can't fear rejection. You can't fear bad reviews because you're going to get both. You're going to get rejected. You're going to get bad reviews. You keep going.
And you're going to get put down because, especially in the genres that we write in, people don't understand them. So if they don't understand them, they fear them.
Exactly.
So, ladies and gentlemen, what we're telling you is you're talking to two women that have succeeded in this business, and it wasn't easy. But if it had been easy, and correct me if I'm wrong, Hydra, if it had been easy, anybody could have done it.
You know, I often tell people anybody can do it, but the caveat to that is you have to actually do it.
There you go. If you want it bad enough, you go and you do it, whatever it is. You just do it. You don't overthink it. You make a plan, you work the plan, and you move on with your life, and you don't say, well, if this happens or if that happens or if hell freezes over, I'll do it. No. Hydra and I both will say, you just do it.
Just do it.
Tomorrow night, I am going to have artist and illustrator Dave Lipscomb on, and we will be discussing his artwork, what he's got going. The show will run for an hour from 8 to 9. Hydra, thank you, my friend, for being on the show and honoring me. And I want to bring you back. She's so annoying. Bring you back after the first of the year, and let's talk about your projects. And see where you are with them, the ones you can't talk about. Maybe they will have jailed by then.
Yeah, hopefully.
And get rid of the allergy so you can be
the hyper-hydra
that I know.
I have to find some medicine to work. But, yeah. Well, I'll talk to you soon.
All right, sweetheart. Thank you so much. And ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, tune in. And the show will be going in archives. If you've missed it, you can pass it around to your friends and relatives. And join me tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Until then, this is Off the Chain, and this is your host, Yvonne Mason. Good night, all. Okay, we're off. Thank you, my dear. I appreciate it so, so much. And when I... when I get the show posted in the podcast, I'll tag you in them. And if you want to download them and put them on your website, put them wherever you want to.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, baby. I appreciate you.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Love you, too. Bye-bye.